Don Carricker, I want a great homeloan.com. Excuse me. Tomorrow's Friday. We will be broadcasting live. Our good friends at Scramblers, Republic Road and National, sponsored by Queen City Motors. And oftentimes, whenever he's available, Don Carricker's out there, as are so many of our partners and so many of you and great people that are grassroots activists. I'm telling you, it is it's the hot spot on Friday mornings. I love to... let me tell you, it's just like 3 or 4 weeks ago, I had somebody come up to me and introduce himself. And he said, I'm so-and-so father-in-law. I was like, you're kidding me. It was somebody I went to high school with. And I was like, how is she? And he said, oh, fine. She said, you know, if I'm ever here to tell you hi. And it's just the people that I'm able to meet and connect with out there on Fridays. I just absolutely love it. And it means so much to me. And I appreciate those of you who come by and say hey. And, you know, even if I know sometimes I'm on the air and you're leaving and you know, just kind of do a wave goodbye or a fist bump. I really, really appreciate it. I just love it. Makes my absolute day. Essentially what I'm getting at here is those events are simply events for me to feed my ego. That's what they're all about. So please, anytime you have an opportunity to do so, I'd love it. And of course, Don Carricker is one of those guys that's out there whenever he's not helping people close on a new home. And I want a great homeloan.com is something he spent a lot of time and effort, he and his team, setting up to make that process as seamless, as easy, as absolute possible. It's what I use. It's what I recommend you use. And it's simple. And the site itself, it's not just for the purpose of, bam, immediately getting started. There's all sorts of information there that can be beneficial to you when it comes to making the decision about a home loan. And once you get into the process, to help navigate you through it. And of course, Don and his team are there for that as well. I want a great homeloan.com because you do. Jason Rima with the latest news update. First alert forecast, a sunny day with a high of 57. Tonight, increasing clouds, 38 for a low. Mostly sunny Friday with a high of 48. Saturday, 46. Sunday, 52 is the number that you can expect to see. Temperature-wise, 47 now. And sunny. Pretty darn nice. Traffic update, I'm Nick Reed. I'll give you a little bit of... backstage info here, because I mentioned Author of the Week. We're waiting to get that call from our Author of the Week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone, and it just hasn't occurred yet. If it does, then we will go ahead and have that segment. But I only mentioned that because I mentioned earlier that we were going to have Author of the Week, and I didn't want those of you listening to go, hey, what happened? So that's what's going on. But fear not, because there's so much stuff. So I've actually thought, not the first person to come up with this idea, of every so often having a fourth hour that is online for those days that I don't get to all the information. I almost always end up in a scenario where I have stuff I didn't get to. But sometimes it's like, it's not that, it's not the biggest deal in the world. But there are times where there's stuff like, oh, I can't believe I didn't get to it. Maybe I should do that every so often. It happens once or twice a week, sometimes more, sometimes none during a week. But just doing that and having it available online, so I don't know, I'll think about it. I tell you what, I'll think about it. I don't know whether or not some of you may be interested in it, others may not. I wanted to share with you a couple of different pieces here. Actually, touch on one while read through the other. The Federalist has a piece, how 31 Republicans just helped Democrats take over the country. This is locally important because one of the 31 Republicans is U.S. Senator Roy Blunt. Rachel Bovard writes in the Federalist, at nearly midnight on Friday, 13 House Republicans gave Speaker Nancy Pelosi the votes she needed to pass the so-called bipartisan infrastructure bill, colloquially known in D.C. as the BIF. In doing so, these House Republicans, among them two members of the House GOP leadership team, all but granted House passage of Joe Biden's hotly partisan $2 trillion reconciliation bill, which represents the largest cradle-to-grave expansion of federal power since the New Deal. Over at National Review, Philip Klein called the move by these 13 Republicans political malpractice and a betrayal. He's right, particularly on the first point. Republicans who supported the bill predictably justified their vote as one for roads and bridges, pointing to the benefit that the bill's largest provisions, like the $47 billion in climate funding and the $66 billion for failing Amtrak system provided without any reform requirements, will ostensibly bring to their districts. As Representative Don Bacon, a Republican from Nebraska, told The Hill, "I thought it was good for our district. I thought it was good for our country." Meanwhile, left-of-center commentator Andrew Sullivan huffed about the fanatical tribalism being applied to a bill about infrastructure. Now, one of the aspects of this that I want to mention here, and it talks about some of what is in this, beyond roads and bridges, is the response some of these Republicans are giving. And one of the Republicans who has really been highlighted, she was at this event that Trump spoke at, and she was visibly shaken because Trump called out those Republicans that helped the Democrats push this through. I don't know what exactly she expected. And the at least her response and some of the other Republicans, their response is, well, this is good for America. Well, if then what they're saying is that Democrats are good for America. Their argument is, essentially, there's no need for Republicans to take control of Congress because what Democrats are putting forth, congressionally speaking, is good. That's what needs to be understood about this with these Republicans, whether it's Roy Blunt or all of these other handful of Republicans across the country that crossed over in order to help the Democrats push this through and arguing that the reason they did it is because it's good for the country. Why then, or how then, can you go out and tell people in this country that they need to give Republicans control of Congress if with your vote you are arguing that Democrats are doing such a fine job that you support their legislation? So, House and part of all of this, and this is what the piece ties in together here. The fact that the left has tied this to the big socialism legislation. And Rachel writes that this was a choice made very clearly and very openly by congressional Democrats. In June, Pelosi stated, quote, "There ain't going to be no bipartisan bill unless we have a reconciliation bill," a sentiment she reiterated in October when she confirmed, quote, "the bipartisan infrastructure bill will pass once we have agreement on the reconciliation bill." House progressives made the linkage of the two bills central to their strategy of leveraging concessions in the reconciliation legislation, refusing to provide votes for the BIF unless their reconciliation demands were met. Six of them ended up refusing to support passing the BIF, paving the way for House Republicans to be the deciding factor. Even President Joe Biden tied the fate of the infrastructure legislation to the reconciliation bill. He did so explicitly in June, then said he didn't really mean it after Senate Republicans expressed outrage, but then 18 of them voted to pass the bill in August anyway, one of which, of course, was Roy Blunt. Even President, Okay, so in October, he told the House Democrats that infrastructure, quote, ain't going to happen until we have an agreement on the next piece of legislation. So the claim that a vote for the infrastructure legislation was merely a vote for roads and bridges, devoid of any other major political context, is just willfully ignorant of the obvious and openly stated politics at work. A vote for the infrastructure bill was clearly, very clearly, a vote for the reconciliation legislation. The inability to understand this raises not only questions of basic political acumen, but of the ability of House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy's leadership team to hold their conference together on consequential votes. It is worth unpacking a few of the provisions in the reconciliation bill that this group of Republicans, including Roy Blunt, will help make possible among them. A 10-year amnesty for illegal immigrants, which includes work permits and driver's license, and cannot be undone by future administrations for a decade. Provides millions of dollars in funding for the IRS to enforce the Biden administration's plan to review every bank account with $10,000 or more. Expands and shores up provisions of Obamacare. Eliminates a statutory cap on employment visas, effectively allowing big tech companies and other mega corporations to prioritize hiring foreign workers over American workers. Facilitates enforcement of Biden's vaccine mandate by increasing OSHA penalties on businesses up to $700,000 per violation, and provides billions in funding for the Department of Labor for increased enforcement. Mandates taxpayer coverage of abortion, leaving the long-agreed-upon Hyde Amendment out of the bill. Provides $500 billion in climate spending, including clean energy tax credits to subsidize solar, electric vehicles, and clean energy production, as well as federal spending on clean energy technology and manufacturing, all while limiting domestic energy production, thereby increasing dependence on Russia and China. It provides roughly $400 billion of expanded government child care and universal pre-K, which pumps millions into failed Head Start programs, excludes support for families who prefer at-home child care arrangements, and by requiring that preschool teachers have a college degree, will reduce the availability of child care options for parents. And a host of new taxes and a giant tax cut for the rich. This is one of the ironic parts of it all. This includes the repeal of the cap for the state and local tax deductions. Democrats will provide a $30 billion net direct tax cut for the top 5% of earners, largely in blue states where the state and local taxes are much higher. This is, again, particularly perfect because this bill has tax increases all over it that are going to disproportionately affect the lower and middle income while giving a tax decrease to the richest people, specifically in blue states. Now, the reason, I know some of you know this and understand it, but just so you have an understanding, it is when you do your taxes, you are allowed to deduct a certain amount of taxes from your federal taxes based on what you pay on the state local level. And that cap was brought down. So the average person still benefits from it, but people that are uber wealthy don't benefit from it. Well, the Democrats want to raise it. Now, people who live in states that have no income taxes or low income taxes don't benefit from this as much, I should say. But people on the left who vote for state governments that jack taxes up, they get to offset that because of this deduction. And while it currently applies to people that pay $10,000 up to $10,000 on taxes, they want to raise it so that the uber rich get to benefit from it as well. So the Democrats that are constantly talking about soaking the rich and lowering taxes for lower and middle income people are raising taxes on lower and middle income people while cutting it for the rich. The Build Back Better reconciliation legislation is a bill that transforms the role of the state in every aspect of an individual's life while expanding key democratic priorities like amnesty, abortion, cheap foreign labor, a dysfunctional health care system, and invasions of financial privacy. And consideration of the bill in the House was not made possible by the Democrats in the majority, but by House Republicans and, of course, the Republicans in the Senate that supported this. There are those like Sullivan who will still bemoan that political polarization has taken over even relatively popular policies like infrastructure. But politicizing the infrastructure bill was the clear and unambiguous choice that Democrats made when they linked the two bills. To expect most Republicans to be as ten-eared and politically naive, or as Representative Kinzinger, an openly tied to Democratic as he noted, openly tied to Democrat priorities, as this group of 13 Republicans is ridiculous. It's asking them to act against their own self-interest. Democrats drafted a partisan reconciliation bill with no Republican input, full of provisions they knew Republicans wouldn't support, then hijacked an otherwise bipartisan bill to ensure passage of its much more expansive and partisan cousin. This was a specific choice Democrats made, and Republicans are not responsible for it, nor should they be expected to vote for a bill that is the stated gateway to related legislation with which they profoundly disagree, regardless. The infrastructure bill now goes to the president's desk. 18 Republican senators, Roy Blunt being one of them, helped pass it in August, and so did 13 House Republicans for a total of 31, knowing full well that they were also voting on the amnesty-filled, abortion-funding, financially snooping, cheap labor-loving reconciliation bill gave in the required boost. Betrayal, as Klein noted, is not too strong a term. As a, it's not really a footnote to it, but I know many of you will wonder why. Why would they do that? Why would a handful of Republicans help the Democrats, not just politically, as they were totally and completely drowning and destroying one another, but vote for something that was going to be part of ushering in the legislation that's pro-abortion, pro-vaccine mandate, all of those other things listed, aside from some secretly, really, truly believing in those efforts, but running as Republicans because they run in areas that they know that's the only way they can win? Here in Breitbart is a story that might answer that question. Republicans voted for Biden's infrastructure bill after securing cash from Chamber of Commerce. A total of 32 House and Senate Republicans helped push President Biden's $1.2 trillion infrastructure passage over the finish line, most of whom who have been showered with campaign cash from the leading lobbyist group behind the bill, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. The story is a fixture of Washington, D.C. swamp culture. Elected lawmakers run for office, grabbing donations from special interest groups, then after their election, voting for legislation supported by those special interest groups despite their constituents' opposition. In the case of Biden's infrastructure bill, the chamber had been lobbying for the measure since the start of the year. By July, Open Secrets reported that the chamber had spent more than $12 million lobbying for Biden's bill in the second quarter alone. In the first quarter, the chamber spent $17.5 million lobbying for the bill. The chamber's intense lobbying focus proved successful when 13 House Republicans voted with Democrats last week to send the bill to Biden's desk after 19 Senate Republicans, including Roy Blunt, helped pass the bill with Democrats. And then it lists all of those offending members. They note, in terms of dollar amounts, campaign contributions reviewed by Breitbart News shows that all but nine of the House and Senate Republicans took cash from the chamber in their recent election and re-election bids. Tillis, representing the swing state of North Carolina, received $15,000 from the chamber's official political action committee. Sullivan Blunt of Missouri, Graham Portman, McConnell Collins each have taken $10,000 from the U.S. chamber PAC in recent election cycles from 2015 through this year. And then the others taking less than that. So Blunt was one of the top cash grabbers. Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed. First Alert forecast sponsored by St. Clair of the Ozarks Home Improvements. Sunny day today, 57 for a high, increasing clouds tonight, low of 38. Mostly sunny, 48 tomorrow. Saturday and Sunday, sunny, a high Saturday of 46 and a high Sunday of 52. It is 8:34, which means it is time for one of the Springfield's Talk 104 $1,000 payout keywords for the giveaway. And the keyword is cash 25. That's cash 25. Text that number to 417-447 KSGF, and that will get you entered for $1,000. The keyword is cash 25, all one word, no spaces. Want to welcome to the show somebody who has joined us in the past. Generally, when Wes Scroggins joins us. It is because there is an event that you all who are wanting to know what can I do, this isn't one of those things that you can do. Wes, thanks for being with us. Appreciate you reaching out and letting me know about this upcoming event. Would you just let us know what it is that is going to be happening? Is it next weekend? Well, you just tell me. Yeah. I don't remember.
Yes. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nick, and it's good to be back. Yes, it is a week from this coming Saturday, November the 20th, at 10 a.m. at the State Capitol building in Jefferson City. And we do have the rotunda reserved. But what this is, it's a vaccine mandate rally that is actually being organized by Senator Mike Moon. All right. So he's the one that is kind of leading this. And we are basically, just calling people to come to that rally and really just make our voices heard. We're very concerned. We're finding out there's concern all over the state of Missouri, and groups are organizing everywhere in order to address, these forced vaccine mandates that seem to be just increasingly, being imposed upon us, the people. And so, we have the constitutional right in the First Amendment. The last phrase of that there is to petition the government for a redress of grievances. And that's what we're calling on Missourians to do a week from this Saturday morning at the state capitol, is to come together and to petition our state magistrates, especially Governor Parson, to stand up and to, as our magistrates, our state leaders, to take action to protect the people from these forced vaccinations and to protect our liberties and our freedoms. So that in a nutshell is what is happening on the 20th.
Let me ask you, I've watched a lot of this play out, and the Attorney General, I see him pop up on news outlets, Fox News, hear him here and there, and talking about lawsuits, and we hear about states having lawsuits, and I just want to give you my feeling of where Missouri is playing in all this, and get your thoughts on it. And it may be totally, completely unfair. I want to be upfront about that. This is just what my gut tells me. My gut tells me that what we're actually doing as a state is just sort of like this mediocre, we're like the bare minimum to fight back. And that when it comes to doing like really, okay, this is red alert. We have got to do something now. That we're not doing as much as we can. And part of it is, I think, in my mind, if we were, then we would be getting the sort of negative attention a state like Florida is getting, DeSantis, the world knows DeSantis. I mean, they knew him ahead of time, but just where he is out there every day, and it's like he's in the fight. And whereas I feel like it's just sort of going the motions and, we'll file a lawsuit. And am I wrong in that?
No, I don't think you're wrong at all. I think you are right on, Nick. And that is what we are calling. We want to call Governor Parson to do what you see DeSantis, doing in Florida. To stand up and to fight. And I agree with you. I mean, the lawsuits, they're, of course, we can say that there's a place for those. And, probably should be filed against these unconstitutional edicts. But Nick, I think you would agree, I don't put a lot of faith in the courts anymore to rule constitutionally on things. I think they've got a poor record here in past years of observing the Constitution and ruling constitutionally. So, if these lawsuits do not stand, the question then becomes, what then? Our state leaders, what are you going to do when the courts shoot down your lawsuits? That's what we are really trying to address. Right?
And in addition to that, people are losing their jobs now.
Yeah.
And the thing that kills me, and I've talked about this, of all the things that we have special sessions for, where a special session is supposed to be called so that the legislature can you know, try mm-hmm. and remedy a problem that is immediate, that if it's not remedied now, people will suffer. And we constantly see these special sessions called that don't really truly fall under that definition. But this does. People now are losing yeah. their job. And they say, well, we'll file a lawsuit. And like you said, that may be a necessary part of the process, but it's like, dadgummit, what is the deal? And I'll be honest, I've been told by some lawmakers off the record that Parson doesn't want to do that, that he really isn't, he's not that against these mandates, but there's, you know, you got to kind of go along with the flow of things. Yeah. And
well,
that's at least the impression a lot of lawmakers who wanted to see a special session have expressed to me.
Yeah, and I think you're correct. I mean, that's the impression I get, too. There has been a lot of lawmakers that have asked him for a special session. There have been a lot of people that have made phone calls to his office asking for the special session. And for some reason, the governor just refuses to call that session and let the legislature address this issue. Exactly why, I don't know. I just know that he's not taking those actions. And we, you're right. I mean, people are suffering now. More people are going to suffer in the very near future if the Biden, you know, mandates, edicts, as I call them, if they stand. You know, more people are going to suffer. So we need to call our magistrates to take immediate action now and to come up, you know, to make their decisions, come up with a plan for how they're going to, you know, protect the people, the rights, the liberties of the people.
All right,
and so that's exactly what the rally is about.
All right. And if you would, again, give the date, the place, the time.
Yeah, it will be a week from this Saturday. That's November the 20th. It is at 10 a.m. It will last until probably 12, at least 2 hours, 12:30, and it's at the State Capitol Building, the Rotunda, there in Jefferson City. Nick, we've got an online petition. It's on the OurFight.org platform that people can find and you know, complete that petition. It's a petition to Governor Parson asking him to, you know, to take action to protect our liberties. People can sign and submit that online. We will get those delivered to the governor. And we're asking people to call his office as well and ask that he attend the rally. He's getting an invitation to attend. But, you know, we would like for him to hear from the people also, that we would like for him to be there. Going to be numerous speakers, things of that nature. And so we would like for him to be there to hear the people.
Maybe right? Maybe you could trick him and tell him that the rally's for a tax increase. Then he'll show up. Well, I'll say one final thing, and this isn't my event, but the thought I have in my head I wanted to share with you, and it sounds to be in line with what your goal is here. A lot of times rallies are there so people, their, quote, voices can be heard. Sometimes rallies are there so that the voice is funneled towards a person. And I think that's what needs it. This doesn't just need to be an event where people show up and like, we want people to know that in Missouri, we don't want this to happen. But it needs to be a call of action to Parson. Parson, you need, so he needs to understand that it's not just voices yelling up to the sky. It is directed to his office. At least that's what I think needs to happen for it to be effective.
Well, and that is exactly what we're doing, all right, or our intention to do. This is being directed to the governor himself, and, you know, we want his attention, and that is the purpose of the rally. So, you know, we need people there. I think we're going to have a large crowd. I think there's going to be a lot of people there. We're getting the word out all over the state, getting good responses. And so, you know, we need that there, those people there to get the governor's attention. But yet at the same time, we know that it doesn't just end with a rally, all right? Yeah. The people have to continue to act and to petition the magistrates to take the stand that it is their obligation and duty to take, you know, and to protect the liberties, freedoms of the people. And that's what we're calling on them to do.
All right, Wes, listen, appreciate it, the insight, the opportunity for people to come and not just have their voice heard, but to direct it towards the person that needs to do his job on behalf of the people of Missouri. If he really is, you know, it's put up or shut up, really, truly against the Biden administration forcing people into taking some sort of injection against their will, whether they want to or not. And we'll get all that information up also at KSGF.com. Wes, thank you, sir.
Hey, can I say one more thing?
Yeah, please do.
You know, first of all, you know, if we lose this fight about, you know, over, you know, our right to what goes into our body, if we lose this fight, Nick, there's no liberty that is safe. You know, if the government can tell us what we have to put into our body. But just one last thing real quick. I just want to let your listeners know, 417 Freedom Fighters is also having a local rally this coming Saturday.
Great.
Sunshine and Glenstone, 12 to 2. It's a patriot rally. You know, you can bring the signs, the vaccine signs, things of that nature. But again, this Saturday, 12 to 2, Sunshine and Glenstone. All right?
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. A lot of folks, and I'll have them ask me, like, what is the deal with Parson? He goes around, he raises taxes, five different tax increases on the people of Missouri. He's just sort of sitting back. Of all of the things that he calls a special session for, he refuses, despite lawmakers asking for a special session so that they can address this. And for whatever reason, he refuses to do that. He refuses to identify critical race theory as an issue, saying at one point that, you know, sort of the Biden line and the Democrats line, that it's not really that big of a deal. It's much ado about nothing. And that if there are any few school districts in Missouri that are actually doing it, that's the parents' responsibility to deal with that. And they can't figure it out. You know, is he really just some left winger that is, you know, infiltrated the Republican Party? I don't know, I think there's a couple potential explanations, but I will tell you this: sometimes the answer is in hindsight. Sometimes people, and I would say, not only as we watch Parson in the years to come, but Senator Roy Blunt as well, after they are no longer in office, let's see what sort of jobs they get. Oftentimes, when a person retires from politics, the job that they get subsequent to their career in politics allows a whole lot of sense to be made, as you're like, oh, now I see. Now I see why they voted for, you know, tax increases to benefit this industry. Now I see why they refuse to, push legislation that would have been a pushback against this special interest. I always find it to be quite interesting when people who are in elected office do things that run contrary to who they claim they are, and then they get out of office, and sometimes you realize that they were essentially auditioning or applying for a future job. So we'll see. Time will tell. Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed. Sarah Myers.
Well, I want to tell you about my friends over at Beadles Property Maintenance. Beadles is spelled B-E-A-D-L-E-S, and they do a vast array of jobs, from crawl space repairs to mold treatment and vapor barriers. They do a little bit of everything, and right now is the perfect time to make sure that if you don't have a vapor barrier or you haven't had your crawl space checked in a long time, it is the perfect time to do that as we head into the colder months. You know, we've had a lot of rain, and mold absolutely loves that. And I actually have a appointment scheduled with Beatles after I get back. I have a plan to give them a call, have them come out, and let's like look at my crawl space because I know a vapor barrier is needed. Now, if you're like me and you also need a vapor barrier, you can give Beatles Property Maintenance a call today. Their phone number is 417-840-3330. And of course, you can find their website, their phone number, plus a list of things that they do on our website, ksgf.com, under the Sarah's Endorsements tab.
I want to play a bit of audio here. John Kerry, the U.S. climate envoy, and he was at a press conference, and he was asked a question about our reliance on, you know, this push for solar energy when so much of it is dependent on slaves in China. By the way, if you've noticed, the left has done a very good job of redefining slavery in modern era. It's they're calling it forced labor. See, that sounds a little nicer. And I want you to listen to John Kerry's response regarding the issue of the fact that we, that our push, the Biden, the Democrats' push for saving the planet is built largely upon the backs of slaves.
How in the several months of meetings behind the scenes with China, did you bring up some of those very contentious issues, such as the use of forced labor in Xinjiang for building solar panels? How did you address it, and how did you kind of overcome that in reaching this final?
Well, we're honest. We're honest about the differences, and we certainly know what they are, and we've articulated them. But that's not my lane here. That's my job is to be the climate guy.
So John Kerry's like, listen, yeah, sure, we let him know we're not real big into slavery and everything. But that's not my lane. That's not my number one priority. Sure, we may have to use slaves in order to fulfill our goals here, but that's not my component to this. So I, you know. Now let me tell you who John Kerry would be. Back in the era where we had the Democrat Party protecting and defending slavery back in the day here in the United States. John Kerry would have been the guy who benefited tremendously in the cotton industry from slavery. And when pressed on the issue saying, hey, you know, sure, I mean, maybe we use slaves and all, but listen, I'm the cotton producing guy. That's my lane. The slavery thing, that's my job. That's not my job. Or the captains of ships that brought slaves up from Africa. John Kerry would have been the guy who said, hey, listen, I'm just the guy who delivers the goods. I'm just the captain of a ship. That's who I am. I'm the captain guy. That's my lane. This is the party that virtue signals as being, you know, somebody who should condemn our own nation because of the past sins of slavery, yet currently today helps make slavery possible. And as one of the individuals who promotes programs and legislation that is reliant on slavery says, well, hey, that's not, you know, that's not my lane. Very classy from the Democrat Party. Want to, like so many of you, acknowledge and thank veterans, and, you know, don't let the current administration or attitude towards our men and women who are serving today and who have served in the past diminish what it is that you all have done for the country. There was an article in, I forget which paper, but it was regarding the mixed emotions that a lot of currently serving individuals, particularly those who served in Afghanistan, have about this Veterans Day. Because what we have is a dichotomy of a day in which we are to honor and recognize veterans versus what can only be described as deplorable treatment of veterans by the current administration, up to and including the recent Pentagon's acknowledgement that the administration has left, that there are direct family, immediate family members that are in hiding in Afghanistan, family members of veterans. This is inexcusable, that we treat our military personnel and our veterans with this such deplorable, disgusting, craven mentality. But just know that is not who we are collectively as Americans. It may be those who are in charge right now. But on the whole, we thank you and we appreciate you. Talk to you tomorrow. I'm Nick Reed.